Thus King Puranjana, being attached to furtive activities, karma kandiya, as well as kith and kin, and being obsessed with polluted consciousness, eventually arrived at that point, not very much liked by those who are overly attached to material things. Report by His Divine Grace, Srila Charanamrita Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this verse, the words Priya Yoshita and Apriya are very significant. The word Yoshi means woman, and Priya means dear or pleasing. Death is not very much welcome for those who are too much attached to material enjoyment, which culminates in sex. There is an instructive story in this connection. Once when a saintly person was passing on his way, he met a prince, the son of a king, and he blessed him, saying, "My dear prince, may you live forever." The sage next met a saintly person, said to him, "You may either live or die." Eventually the sage met a brahmachari devotee, and he blessed him, saying, "My dear devotee, you may die immediately." Finally the sage met a hunter, and blessed him, saying, "Neither live nor die." The point is that those who are very sensual and are engaged in sense gratification do not wish to die. Generally, a prince has enough money to enjoy his senses. Therefore, the great sage said he should live forever. For as long as he lived, he could enjoy life. But after his death, he would go to hell. Since the brahmachari devotee was leading a life of severe austerities and penances, in order to be promoted back to Godhead, the sage says that he should die immediately so that he need not continue to labor hard and we could instead go back home, back to Godhead. A saintly person may either live or die, but during his life he is engaged in serving the Lord, and after his death he is also serves the Lord. Thus this life and the next are the same for a saintly person, for in both he serves the Lord. Since the hunter lives a very ghastly life due to killing animals, and since he will go to hell when he dies, it is advised to neither live nor die. King Puranjana finally arrived at the point of old age. In old age, the senses lose their strength, and although old man desires to enjoy his senses, and especially sex life, he is very miserable because his instruments of enjoyment no longer function. Sensualists are never prepared for death. They simply want to live on and on and extend their life by so-called scientific advancement. Some foolish Russian scientists also claim that they are going to make man immortal through scientific advancement. Under the leadership of such crazy fellows, civilization is going on. Cruel death, however, comes and takes all of them away, despite the desire to live forever. This type of mentality was exhibited by Hiranyakasipu, but when the time was right, the Lord personally killed him without living a second. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation purport. To the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 27th chapter, 12th verse. In the matter of the chapter entitled Attack by Chanda Vega on the City of Purancha, Om Tat Sat. This is part of the story of Puranjana. Narada Muni was preaching to the king of Vrishinibari. And sometimes it's easier to give an analogy to someone. This actually, most of the stories in the Vedas are histories. But this particular story is an analogy. Everybody mentioned in this story represents something. It's like Chanda Vega is the king of the Gandharvas. And he has 350 soldiers, 320 soldiers, men and 320 women who are attacking continuously. And the city of Gauranga is protected by a serpent with five heads. And the fight's going on for 100 years. In the lunar calendar, there's less than 360 days. Although, as far as I can figure out, it's about 355. Because that's how many days I have every year to travel. Do my service before the next Gaur Purnima, the Gaur Purnima. But in any case, here. So all this is indicating, after telling the whole story of Paramachana, then the King Pachinabrasa, what is an amazing story. And then, what does this all mean? And then Radha Muni goes back and then gives the purport of the whole story. We get a double of that. As we're going along, we get purports. And then when we go back, and we get the purport of the purport. Because this whole story has a purport by Narada Muni. Explain to Kim Prachinabari how Paranjan is actually a living entity, and his wife is intelligent, and the city with nine gates is the body, and the snake with the five heads is the life force in the body, on the five pranas, and the Gandharvas attacking, our time attacking every day, or maybe, the, like, so that is, everything has its meaning. And for King Paranjana, he was a very successful king. He was very successful in material enjoyment, which has already been described, how he has courted his queen, and how he got her hand, and how they became united. It's got different layers of the analogy. You can go one layer, one level, it's all one, and then there's other. It's like analogies within analogies. It's a quite interesting way. Sometimes you have to preach to people who are not interested in spiritual life, you tell them, King Pachinabhai wasn't ready to just sit down and hear the philosophy. You are not this body. You are, it's like, some people, even the simplest philosophy goes right over their head, doesn't make any sense to them, what are you talking about? But when you explain things in an analogical form, then they can start to relate with it. You go back and explain it, and it starts to make more sense to them. The four Vedas are giving philosophy, rules, and regulations. And the fifth Veda, now the Puranas, are mainly analogies. So in that, there's a verse where it says how the fifth Veda is the Purana. In the Chandogya Upanishad, as well as in various Upanishads, it mentions the same thing. And various Puranas, it mentions the same thing. Because Purana is saying that the fifth Veda wouldn't be accepted by the strict followers of the Veda, they say, well, it's self-serving. But even the Upanishads also confirm it. It's the Vedas are the fifth Veda, the Puranas. And then there's another verse, after establishing that in his Satsandarbha, Jiva Goswami establishes that Krishna states in one scripture that of all the Vedas, he likes the fifth Veda the best, because everything's by analogy, and giving histories and stories and examples is much easier for people to understand than the straight philosopher, for the straight philosophers who can go right into the epistemology of the Vedic
viewpoint,
then there's no problem. You can read the Vedanta Sutra, some of the Upanishads, but if they want to, if they're more normal kind of a level of education or understanding about philosophical things, then it's easier to understand using examples. Maybe that's the way that Krishna wants material friends, coming up with little stories that make sense, or adapting. I didn't watch it, but I noticed that there was a movie on the plane where they adapted Hamlet to some kind of a modern story where some lady was daughter of a rich magnate in Copenhagen. Everything was just not modern corporate world, but it was changed, but they spoke in old English. They actually spoke the words of Hamlet, but all the people were in the scenes were all modern. You can actually change the words and change around, and you can explain the same philosophy using some analogy. Maybe that's easier for some people to understand. That's how Yayati Maharaj, he was preaching to his wife. He said, you know, once there was this old, goat, macho goat, and he was really good, very strong, he could jump around, and he was the strongest of all the goat men. And then he attracted the most beautiful of all the she-goats. And for a long time they enjoyed together and had many baby goats enjoyed like that. So, he was giving the story to one time. And then after telling the story, how at the end the male goat, you know, realized that had a change of perspective, wanted to see something more in life. He said, actually, I'm the male goat, you're the she goat. Now it's time to go on to higher things. But they had a good laugh at that. Somehow, like here it says, not to be overly attached to sense gratification, overly attached to the opposite sex. Overly. Some attachment is natural. It's natural that there should be some attachment. That's the amazing thing that somehow in the West, Prabhupada always said, even white people cannot be happy in their marriage. It always says, don't be so attached you forget the purpose of life, but it's good, it's a protection to be attached between the husband and wife. A wife is chaste if she's attached to her husband. A husband is also protected if he's attached to his wife. To a certain point, because then that is the protection from being attached to everybody and being totally attacked by so many material desires. In fact, in the fourth canto, in another part of the fourth canto, Priyavrata, who was a lifelong brahmachari, they wanted him to get married and be a manu, and take up manus are responsible for populating the universe with human beings. According to the Vedas, at one point in time there were no human beings on this planet. But Manu sent some of his descendants here and they populated the earth. Quite interesting for people who want to think, you know, it's like the evolution, and they never find a missing link, and there is one. We didn't come from this planet. These things are in the Vedas, but somehow, you know, it's like people are looking, oh, what is the mystery of the universe? Is there life on other planets, you know? And it's right there, like, it's all written in black and white, and it's very clear. This is the history of our planet. These are the most ancient literatures written in Sanskrit hieroglyphics, telling the history of our Earth. But nobody, you know, it's like, you know, this religion, so, you know, let's look for that, you know. If they found some, you know, Egyptian, you know, thing, you know, something written in Egyptian hieroglyphics, and you go, oh, that's it. But because the Vedic culture is still existing, for some reason they're not looking into that. I don't know why. It's like amazing. You go into the Epcot, and everywhere they show you the evolution of the world civilization. They always jump from cavemen to Egyptians to modern people. It's like anything east of Egypt is like out of the picture. But even according to the modern anthropologists, who we don't necessarily agree with, they say, well, the original civilization comes somewhere there, Pakistan or something, or some other, somewhere up there. but they have a whole different human civilization. Is very short. Live by their calculations. But anyway, Priyavata, that's another point getting off the track here. But Priyavata Brahmacharya, when he was preached to that he should accept Grihastha life, he was told that Grihastha life is like a fortress. You're actually much safer if you're properly married and properly in that ashram, then there's less chance for fall down. Less chance to have extra marital sex if you're properly and happily married. Since sex outside of married life is very sinful and produces a lot of bad karma, but within marriage it's not sinful. Of course you have, so therefore he was recommended he should be married, and then he got married and he was very on the order of the gurus, so he got married, and he was very strong. He was worried, well, they get married, I'm not going to, you know, get off the track. And they said, well, of course, you shouldn't get too attached and lose your, you'll be protected. As long as you do devotional service, you'll be protected. So, also in the history of Kinyayati, mentioned the Padma Purana. You know how, you know, he got attached to different women. But he always married them. It was, in those days, as a king, and they could be polygamous. He would be responsible, wouldn't just like, you know, enjoy and forget. He would just want to marry them. He didn't want to have a couple of wives. But his situation, so at one point he became, it was very well established in his ashram. And some Vaishnava Brahmana preached to him how he should get his entire kingdom, at that time he was the emperor of the world, to worship Krishna. That Krishna was the supreme lord, if they chanted Krishna's name, then people would become very pious automatically. And they would, and since it was like Satya Yuga, people were anyway quite pious and they were very regulated. So he sent preachers around and established everyone chanting Hare Krishna. As a result, and worshipping Krishna at Krishna temples and preached how it wasn't necessary to worship the devas or worship them only as assistants of Krishna, not independently. So he established a Krishna consciousness in the whole world. It's at that time, because people were very regulated, you know, everyone was married, it was 99.9, everyone was married, and they're having children. But they were very regulated, and they were all very busy in their spiritual lives, and it said that nobody was growing old. Like this whole verse is about old age attacking the city of Puranjana, or his body. That's what he's being attacked now. It goes on, the end of the chapter gives the details of old age. That's how it was really, I haven't read this for a while. It's quite, really quite amazing, quite nice description about old age. Actually, old age made a pass at Narada Muni. She's in the form of a lady. Asked Narada Muni to please accept her, since he was a brahmachari, she wanted a husband. And he said, well, I'm sorry, but I'll pass this one by. But he was so kind that he arranged for her, sent her to somebody who could protect her. But she was so angry at him for not satisfying her desire. And she also cursed Narada Muni that he couldn't stay in any one place for very long. So Narada Muni gets his curse from this. Daksha gets cursed from old age. So this is the curse of the brahmacharis or the sannyasis that they have to keep traveling. So anyway, we'll be reading future verses and all break how it turns out. He arranges a protector for her. But so what happened in the Yagati Maharaj's kingdom is because everybody was Krishna conscious and worshipping Krishna, nobody was, you know, having sinful activities, everyone was doing their dharmas accordingly, that nobody was going home. Jara couldn't attack anybody. They're all staying up. So they would never get beyond middle age. And since it was Satyuga and there was no pollution and all the kind of problems, even now, even if you don't get old, you probably die from either a car accident or, you know, your neighbor smokes cigarettes and you get a free to smoke. You know, some pollution, or there's so many things to get you. In New Orleans, if you drink the water, I heard you're finished. Because there's 187 chemical plants that illegally dump all the waste into the Mississippi, which is somewhat pumped into the water system. So if you drink the tap water, you're finished. That's what I was told about 20 years ago. I don't know if they said anything yet. Same. I was taking a morning walk on the side of the lake in Michigan in Chicago, by the temple's about 2 blocks from the lake, 3-4 blocks from the lake. And just at sunrise, there was just water pouring out from some place about a mile down. Made a lot of sound. And some said, oh, that's a local, some kind of a plant that illegally they dump all their stuff into the lake. They're not supposed to do it, but the police don't get up early, so they do it early in the morning. So it seems to be ecological pollution is very big in India. The Ganges has been used as just a dumping ground for so many years, and now for about 10 years the government passed laws that they couldn't dump things into the Ganges, but of course if they're cheating in America, you can imagine what they're doing. The Supreme Court has become very active in protecting ecological issues and enforcing the laws which the government doesn't enforce, like a bribe and things. So someone can make a public action, they call it, public interest case, and then the court has been supporting and finding and getting people based on the people going to the court and making. Anyway, there were these problems of pollution in the Satyuga. So people weren't getting, they weren't dying. They weren't growing old and they weren't dying either. And but they had their children, and then the children grew up and they weren't getting old either. Like this, it went on for 3 generations. And the world was getting more population, and everybody was quite nice, devotees, there wasn't really any problem. And nobody, you could be with your great-grandfather. Your grandfather, he wouldn't be old, he would also be, you know, look young. So the whole world was just like a really golden age. It was an unprecedented situation. But as a result, some of the people in some of the devas in the universe administration became very envious at Yati Maharaj, whether he's messing up the whole place. Indra especially is king of the devas. He likes to see everything go along in the normal Karmakanda way. He's the king of the Karmakandis. He took a tour of the universe, see what's happening, and he went down to the Kalish regions, where Yamaraj and the Yamadutas, and all the Yamadutas, you know, I was like sitting there
nobody's dying, you know.
First time Yamadutas have nothing to do. Usually they got, you know, it's like a, quite a good job. You know, you have plenty of business. There's never any shortage of people dying. But in this case, nobody was dying. They're all spacing out there. You know, what are we doing here? Nothing to do with it. If they came down, they all started, you know, surrounding him and saying, what's going on here? Kingdom, you know, nobody's dying anymore. You know, we're just sitting here spacing out, you know. Why don't you get things together? And they said, yeah, I should do something about this. Yeah, this is not right. It's too much. It's gone beyond the tolerable limits. So not everybody, you got, even in the universe, you have so many people who are working against you. So, Indra called Cupid. He told him that, look, you made so many big rishis and sages fall down. I want you to take care of this guy. Get him into old age. Get him to fall down. Make him have illicit sex. Otherwise, stop him. You know, we gotta bring things back to a normal limit. So he sent Cupid down to attack Yati Maharaj, Padma Purana says. But then Cupid arrow didn't work. Because he was happily married, loved his wife. They were having a normal, good relationship. And he wasn't, you know, completely celibate, but he was, and that was also protecting him. And Cupid, you know, was like, he wasn't, like some sage who's been celibate for a long time and not just on the path and suddenly is exposed to a very beautiful woman and finds it difficult to control himself. Yeah, he was quite very well situated in his ashram, very well protected. And Cupid, he came back to Indra and he said, you know, wow, this guy is very tough. He's a devotee. He's well situated as Asha. I can't get through.
You nonsense! You stupid! I told you to do something and do it!
You're not, you know.
I went make the guy fall down! What do you mean, stupid? You can't make him fall down. Do something!
I'm just telling you, it's not an easy job. It's going to take me time. It's going to require a major operation. I'm going to need, if you want me to do this one, I'm going to need apsaras, I'm going to need gandharvas, I need a team, 50 people. It's going to take me a few years, but I'll get it together.
Take whatever you need, but they should fall down. I'm the king of heaven, I'm telling you, make him fall down, make people die again.
Heavy, he's got the whole, you know, universe against this guy. He doesn't, he's going on, you know, chanting and doing his normal thing. He's got like a whole universal thing to against him. I mean, he's just a simple devotee. It's not like he's even, you know, very just following his guru's instruction, getting everybody to chant, and just very profound philosopher. I came later. This is just like in the middle, near, not middle, say the latter part of his reign. Well, you heard the story I told you before.
No.
So, I'll go on. I'll say that. I just want to say how we can see that a properly executed grihastha life is a very safe situation. Of course, here, like anyway, every life has its ups and downs. Further on here, it mentions how when Ranjana was under severe attack later on by the daughter of time, old age, and it was a major operation. They're taking over the city, or they were eliminating all the different parts of the different key points in the city were being attacked. They were becoming dysfunctional. You know, like his body started functioning, different organs were copying out on him. And he was struggling, and finally at one point, he lost. During the struggle, one verse mentions, at that time he noticed how his friends and people were not paying so much attention to him anymore. Even his wife had become cold to him now. Things are getting really tough, and he's struggling and fighting, and the war is going on. It's interesting, the analogy, how it develops. So it's natural at the end of life, and material life, things change. Especially with the materialist, everything is based on sense gratification. If the things are not based on sense gratification, the sense gratification is a side issue, and the main issue is God consciousness, then it's a completely different situation. That's why in the Vedic culture, when eventually the husband and wife become more detached from the material sense gratification, they want to work together as friends and be engaged in their vanaprastha life. And they just concentrate on the spiritual aspects. And they're very close friends and helping each other in that days of life. One of my godbrothers, Jananda Prabhu, at 15 now, he's taken vanaprastha. And he gives seminars on vanaprastha ashram. He said it's the big future for Islam. Because, of course, we have, in the beginning, Islam was all young people. There were so many brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, and then at one point, most people got married. Now we have so many married people. One day, hopefully, in the future, then children grow up and then they enter into the vanaprastha level. In the big temples in India, in big institutions like in the Ramakrishna Mission in Prabhupada, which is one of the most well-managed institutions. We do not agree with their philosophy in every respect, but in terms of management, they're very well managed. And their whole management is mainly from retired government officers who have taken sannyas in the Ramakrishna Mission. And they were very good, qualified people materially. They're judges and government people, a lot of them, a few businessmen, but mainly it's like bureaucratic people. So they really manage the institution very well. Of course, you don't have to in Vaishnava or the Dharma, you don't have to take sannyas. You can be a vanaprastha. In Mayapur, in our meeting we had in June in the lecture, we were discussing how we want to have different things to serve ISKCON society. We want to have hospices for people who are dying so that they could go to Mayapur and get cared for in the final moments of their life. Have a vanaprastha ashram for the older people that are going to live in the retired life and do some devotional service, have programs for young people, how to engage them in the Mayapur project and train in the educational facilities. Guest house is now under construction for ISKCON devotees. We feel guilty that because Mayapur is all decentralized, up to now anybody visiting Mayapur has to pay for guest rooms. Someone comes to my work in my office, I don't have immediately a room for them ready, and I want to put them in the guest room. I have to pay for the guest room. That's just the way my Mayapur is like made, so that each division is self-sufficient. And that's the way the guest house works. But then people come into my Mayapur and they say, well, it's supposed to be our home, we've got to pay it every step. So we're building one guest house just for ISKCON devotees who have been veterans in our movement to stay free. And guess he'd like to even have a limousine pick him up from the airport, take him out, feed him for a month. He's had all kinds of dreams to do wonderful things with this. We hope that. At least now they're building the guest house. Or they're building a guest house, and a certain number of rooms, 30 rooms, will be for this purpose. At least for a month, everybody comes and stay. Who's been a veteran? I don't know how you're going to prove who's a veteran, I guess. This guy is a preacher. They can identify him, so. But, don't worry about that. So this Vanaprastha, that's important. Ashram, which is just, you know, the very, just like the twilight of the rising sun of that ashram is just starting to, glimmers of light are starting to come. People are looking to that. But so for the spiritual people, death in old age is not a problem, because for them it means in the mouth, my body is less agitated, so, you know, it's still desires, but it's less of the, you know, when you're young, the body is really overhyped, overactive, sometimes hyperactive, and it's more difficult to control without engaging the senses very actively in the different activities. So, in that very active period of life, engaging the senses in Krishna's service and in active, material activities which are dovetailed in Krishna's service is the better way. When you get older, then that same intensity, of course, materialists, they try, even in their old age, they don't know any other form of happiness than sense gratification. Then they're just thinking, you know, how can I be happy if I can't have sex? How can I be happy if I'm not able to have sense gratification? And so then somebody was telling me, Janu Das from Sweden told me how he was listening to some talk show where all these old people were talking about the subject and how frustrating it was if he couldn't have sense gratification. When they could have it, they felt so wonderful. Very, you know, the whole different perspective about life when you're in a spiritual vision of life, and actually you're preparing for death to leave this world and go back to your Maker, to go back to the Supreme Lord and the eternal goal. So old age for the transcendentalist isn't something that they despise or fear. It says here, for people who are too attached to sense gratification, they don't look forward to old age. For transcendentalists, old age means something that's like a warning. It's a preparation. It's an opportunity to become more spiritual. So it's not looked upon in the same kind of fear or as it is for the materialists who are really, really afraid when they start seeing and getting old. Things don't work the way they used to. I can't, because everything's based on the body. So when your body isn't working up to the mind, then you're in big trouble if that's your only source of happiness. But if your happiness is mainly from spiritual life, the material side was just to keep things, you know, properly in balance. It's a whole different situation. So anyway, back to the Yati Maharaj. Here he is. It's a whole interplanetary conspiracy to get him to fall down. So then Cupid gets his team. So we're going to do this SWAT operation, this sting operation. It was like, you get in America, they have these undercover drug police who go and infiltrate into narco traffickers and do things, you know. So here you have from another planet, from Indraloka and different planets, they're infiltrating the Earth in order to cause the emperor of the Earth to fall down into illicit sex. And so he said, this is not going to be easy. He's got a really tight operation here. Everybody's doing devotional service for Krishna. Nobody's growing old. What we're going to have to do is somehow get them deviated from the pure devotional service. This is the only thing we can do. So they came up with a plan. What we're going to do is we're going to do a drama troupe. And we're going to do everything perfect. We'll do pure Krishna bhakti, Vishnu lila, as it is, without changing. Until we can get, it may take us years to do this. Once we get the confidence of the king, then I'll tell you our next phase. For now, it's bhakti. And later on, we'll make our move. Now we have to get the confidence of the king. So the whole thing, the complete, in India they call this charso bis. It's the penal code for cheating. It's 420. Indian IPC, Indian Penal Code. So somebody who's a cheater, they're known as a 420. That's the code. If somebody tells you you're a 420, then it doesn't mean it's, oh, you know, you're a 420. It means you're a cheater. So, I know that Achyutananda, he told me how he was cheated by somebody. He was doing Harinam and he was doing lectures when he was in India alone. And somebody came up to him and said, you know, your lecture is so wonderful. I just heard, I tell you, when I heard your lecture, I was transported to the spiritual world. I mean, now I understand what is the purpose of life. I mean, everything is so clear to me. And I really feel that I'd like to serve you. I'd like to get more and more of your instruction. And this person was just going every day and visiting him and hearing the driving and I was going with him on the bus and then serving him, buying some things. And then I think they had about a week or two. And then one day he came up to see Achyutananda up on the top floor. He was staying on the fourth floor of the Gaudiya Math. And he said, you know, I just took your instructions, everything. It's just so inspiring for me. It's just, I can't tell you, I have so much. Just so much spiritual strength from you. You know, so one thing that I wanted, if I could just have to make to my ailing mother, maybe some flower prasadam from the deity. So the guy knew that. They gave the flower prasadam. They had to go down to the ground floor where the temple was next, you know, like the guest house, there was a temple. Yeah. You know, why not? So, sure, I'll get you a flower for your ailing mother. He goes downstairs. The guy had already like completely scammed the whole room out. Robbed it all in the way, had the money stashed, robbed his money, took his tape recorder, took everything. And then, you know, real fast, like within, you know, 5 minutes, scored whatever he wanted to score. Then he was going down on the stairway. And then he said, oh, you know what, I'm with you, I forget time and space. And I just forgot the time. I didn't realize it was already so late. Do you have the flower for my mother? Oh, thank you so much. You'll understand how much I really appreciate you in due course of time. Thank you very much. And then he goes on with the flower, you know, and he's thinking, wow, you know, what a wonderful devotee. Maybe he'll become a pure devotee of Krishna. He goes to his room, everything destroyed, all the things torn up, you know, all his valuables were stolen. And then, you know, huh? 420. 420, right. That was 420, right. Okay. So you gotta be careful. That's why there's a saying in Bengali, Ati Bhakti Chura Lakam. Too much devotion is a sign of a thief. Because most people that struggle to become spiritual, it's not easy. Your friends are not helping, your parents don't help. The whole environment is against you, your senses are fighting. It's a battle. It's a battle to be God-conscious in this material world. So normally people, when they want to be Krishna-conscious, they face so many difficulties and they need help and what to do. So usually you find that for people it's a bit of a struggle. And then those who get over, that's why it's glorious. Krishna actually sells himself to his devotee. He knows how hard it was for them to be his devotee in this material world, and his reciprocation. They give themselves to Krishna, he reciprocates and he sells and gives himself to them. Because they have so many wonderful qualities. He he appreciates their wonderful qualities and their dedication and their sacrifice. So, but if somebody does it right from the beginning, bhakti, great, everything, maybe too good to be true. I mean, some people are actually, like we said, nitya siddhas. Yes, sometimes we get treated like that by people. Sometimes, because you're looking for people who are here to be Krishna conscious, you get somebody that's like so good, you forget that it's usually a struggle. You have to be careful if it's too good. So anyway, here was this drama troupe. Suddenly appears out of nowhere, putting on dramas all over the world about Krishna. So the king gets the notice of some drama troupe. So he sends his spies to check this one out. I don't want any bogus philosophy spread in my kingdom. We're keeping purely according to Sadhu Shastra Guru. So there's people there, you know, in the audience, but they're actually the spies of the king and they're watching. Brahmanas, different people sent. But the order of Cupid was, Cupid's coming in, strictly Shastra, all pure. So everything was okay, then, you know, so they get the report back, no, it's okay, seems to be quite up and up. Because it was a long range 420 operation. It was, you know, so that they do everything right, they know exactly what they're doing. So they did everything right. For years together, until finally the king was willing to actually wanted to see their drama himself. Of course, he could have checked out, you know, where these people came from. Would have found, you know, they didn't actually come from this planet. They didn't investigate that far. So then, the king, the first time, you know, when he was watching, he was also like, you know, really uptight, just to see what's going to happen. They watching, you know. But no, they're still on the same orders, pure bhakti. So then everything was all right. The king gradually said, "No, this is a very good," met the head of the king, congratulated them, nice thing, service you're doing, helping people be Krishna conscious. So after a while, they became the royal drama troupe. Now, they completely infiltrated right up the top, royal drama troupe. They're the best actors in the whole universe. I mean, wow. People with memories, they could... So it was a wonderful setup they did. So finally, commonly, he told the truth, okay, now we're going to go into phase B. We got the confidence of the emperor. On this date, you know, November 15th, it's going to be a big show. And the king's going to be there in the front row. So the only way we can get to the king, now he's not on his guard, he believes in us. We have to implicate him in a Krishna avaraj. Because when you offend Krishna, then you lose protection. So, who's going to do the avaraj against Krishna? Who's going to say a wrong line and going to make the avaraj? So this is the exact timing. We have to do this just at this time. You do the avaraj. The king is going to immediately feel bad. And it's going to be, what he's not expecting, so it's going to be in shock for about, give him 10 seconds. Then he's going to start praying to Krishna in his heart, please forgive me for this offense. We got 10 second time window there. Within that time, I want you, the two most beautiful upstarts, just at that moment, you'd have to kind of slip it drop your coin. At that moment, I'm going to hit him with everything I got. I'm going to give him, I'm going to give every single arrow I got, my entire stock. I'm going to spam it. And it's going to be a 1, 2, 3. And it has to be exact timing. This is the only chance we got. For years together, just to get one moment to make him, you know, see a Krishna parada, and because he allowed it before he begs for forgiveness. Of course, Krishna protects his devotee. He gets back to God at the end. But anyway. So they have the whole thing. You get this, you know, the whole thing's going on, like, you know, suddenly, you know, completely off the line, off the script, on their script, but, you know, not off the real script. Then somebody commits this offense to Krishna. The king is just like, what? Mostly like shocked. Like, what is that? You know, it's like, just at that moment, you know, Cupid, okay, 1, 2, 3. Yeah! He shoots him everything he's got, and the upstart, you know, like, you know, drops her clothes in the thing, or trips or whatever happens, and then he gets sammied with the Cupid arrows, and then one bad thought comes in his mind. One bad thought, because the guy, he's so old, he's really three generations, should have, you know, beyond three of their generation, he's so old. He's like thousands, and he's really old. The one bad thought, then he like starts to age. Right on the spot. But then he goes from like 30 to 55 maybe in a few, then, but he already immediately praying to Krishna for forgiveness and how did this happen and throwing the thought out of his mind. But the guy with this blew ahead, like from middle age, young man to now he looked a little old. Still, he was strong, go hunting and everything. But he was now beyond young to old. And immediately, the fourth part was to accommodate. And as soon as we do this, all of you got to be off. You got to be off that stage. You got to be off this planet within about 20 seconds. Otherwise, you're all finished. We're going to be finished. You're going to get it. So. The stage was, you know, they all disappeared and left the planet, you know, and then, you know, that's all he could do for 3 years is then they look at this. I told this would take me a while. This is the first step, you know. It's showing we can do something, you know. Now we got, I got a second plan now. I didn't go too far, but we try. So this goes on like that. But I found it so interesting. So, wow, what a story. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. What an amazing story. But it shows us why we have to chant, why we have to avoid aparad. We're so careless sometimes with Krishna aparad, Vaishnava aparad. It's more serious than Krishna aparad. All the different offenses. We're sometimes so careless. And these are the things which actually take away our, you know, we have the force field of Krishna bhakti around us. As long as we keep our sadhana, keep our chanting, keep our reading, do our devotional service, and the people materially are protected with a nice, their chaste relationship, then they're not there. Even if someone may not be very happy, somehow happiness is something that eludes people in the Kali Yuga. Even if they're not really happy, but if they're following their vows, the vows itself are very protective. Vows are something that give a person spiritual force. Lord Chaitanya appreciated very much the people who followed their vows. And he rejected people who didn't follow their vow. If someone was a brahmachari and they wanted to act like they were a vihasta, he didn't appreciate that. Chota Haridas was taken off his inner circle for being careless and dealing with the opposite sex. But on the same thing, people who are married, he'd tell them to have babies, he'd give the names for the babies, he would be very encouraging for people who are rightly situated in every house. His point was, don't be hypocrite. Whatever you are, stay in your, whatever you've taken a vow to be, do that. Follow your vow. If you've taken a vow of grihastha life, follow it. If you've taken a vow of renunciation, then follow that. Then that, you know, we have two kind of options. The other, like, sinful things are not options, but those options were what he appreciated. Either do one or the other. If you're a grihastha, then do that. Don't be unchaste, or don't, you know, artificially renounce your grihastha duties. That would not also be proper. If you're a renounced order, then don't wear saffron cloth and do things which you shouldn't do. With sense gratification. So that's what Lord Chaitanya, he was expecting from people. Once they were in knowledge, people didn't have knowledge, it was another thing. So everybody chanted Hare Krishna. Once they had knowledge, he expected them to act very responsibly. And that's the protection that protects us, to follow our vows. Ultimately, we don't want to be drawn back again into the material world and have to just be kept in conditional life. We want to be able to serve Krishna and develop our love for Krishna. So many devotees of Krishna, they're thinking always about Krishna in their heart, but he's my real love. He's the person that's my real protector. But superficially, they... Ultimately, Draupadi are going to get five of the best husbands in the entire world, the strongest heroes, and she was a perfect wife for them. But at one point, you know, she came to Krishna and said that, you are really my only protector. Ultimately, you're the only one I can depend on. And that was vividly proven in her own life. So, Krishna consciousness is very deep and so much, very quick, but so much is there that we can never find the end of it. Some of the basic things are simple enough. Those are not quite detailed. So somehow, of course, at the end, we know in the Bhagavatam, we don't get all the little stories, but in the end, we know that Yayati Maharaj in the ninth canto, he finally even, he detached from his household life, he detached from everything, he even gave back his youth to his son. He just fully surrendered to Krishna and went back to God. So there are different ways. Some people do karma kanda for some time and then they get into the spiritual life later, or some people, they practice the Vaishnava Dharma throughout their life, and they're considered, for them, living and dying is the same. They're living in God consciousness, and when they die, they go back to Krishna. People who are in sinful life, the butchers and the people working in these casinos and that, for them, they shouldn't live, they shouldn't die. Maybe when you got money, okay, live it up, because you better live it up now while you got a chance after your money, after this life's over, you're in big trouble. Quite an interesting perspective. The people here, at least people should know what the options are. They should know what the alternatives are in life. That's the most unfortunate thing, that here in the West, people don't know what the options are. In the whole world now, people are basically out of touch with the reality. With the real reality, they see what they see is not reality. This is the illusion that Maya is creating for them. They don't see the overview. What you're enjoying now is what's going to cause you suffering later. They don't see the reaction to what they're doing. Reality means seeing the broad perspective. Otherwise, a little child, what they see in their vision, it's all real. But they're only able to see things through their childish eyes. Someone who's older, more experienced, can understand that a broader perspective. You have to stop playing and you have to study, because you have to get an education, because with education you can do so many things. And maybe for the child, playing around is the most important thing, because that's reality for the child. So reality isn't what we feel. as much as that's part of it. But it's what the whole consequences of what we're doing and how we have choices and we can do different things with our time, and the result of that will be something much more desirable. So that's why parents tell children, you know, you have to do your studies, you have to take care of your health, you have to do certain things. And it's like that. But when you're Krishna conscious, you have a much broader perspective on life. You know what the universe is, you know what karma is, you know what life and death is. Everybody has to die as old age comes and attacks everybody. And that's where the devotees, they can actually help people to prepare for this last phase to become God conscious. It's a good opportunity. Instead, the materialists are inventing such things like the word for tiger in Bengali is vagra. Answering. So people want to be tigers in their old age when they're already finished, normal overuse of their instruments. So this is the unfortunate thing that people don't realize what the real purpose of life is, and as a result, they'll probably come back as pigeons or sparrows or monkeys. They're not heading for a very good result. Because they don't have the overall picture. We were having a bhakti riksha meeting, and then one lady in the discussion said, whatever you eat, that's what you become in your next life. And they showed how, if you eat fish and things, maybe you become a cat or a tiger because they like to eat fish. And in the discussion, there was one lady, and she was very attached to eating fish, even though she was coming to the temple for years together. She always kind of avoided that issue. Within the discussion, in a bhakti dikshita, it was a small group, they were discussing all amongst known people, friends. I said, but gee, I don't want to become a cat in my next life. I sure don't become a tiger. So, well, if the kind of food you eat, that will lead you. If that's the one you really like, you might be a human being. If you need a lot more fish, some certain kinds of cats that fish out of the water. It's fish every day, three times a day, whatever. And somehow, she said, well, I really don't want to become a cat. I really want to go back to Godhead. And fish is what's holding me up. And from today on, no more fish. I just decided. So sometimes when people reach a certain point, one man told me that he's a big businessman, flies every week to Singapore and Tokyo and Taiwan, buys things, right? Import, export. His wife is a devotee, comes every day to the temple, part of the Bhakti Riksha group. He would bring her to the temple, sit outside, smoke in the car, occasionally come in and take a darshan, Hindu, and South Indian Madras. So then, one day he revealed all this to me, that I thought my wife, I just kind of thought it's okay, it's a thing, it's good. I'm a modern man, businessman. I have to live the modern way, and modern means and all these things, risky. Anyway, every month or two, the rotation, they'd have the meeting in the house. I'd be the host, also help my wife play the part. Was least interested in all these things, but because I would be the, just to please my wife, I would be the host also. Sit in the meeting sometimes, as long as I could, without smoking. And then in the discussions, hearing, actually over a period of time, he started getting softened up, but he didn't really realize it. And one day in the discussion, they're talking about intoxication. So why, it's all right to take coffee and tea, isn't it? Well, no, you shouldn't really take coffee and tea. This is an artificial stimulation and create some kind of dependence. You want to actually have the pure happiness coming from the heart, without having our consciousness clouded by artificial stimulants and crutches. So he thought, he told me, I was thinking that time, no, if you can't take coffee and tea, there's no use asking about whiskey. He said, but you know, I want to just tell you, Guru Maharaj, now I'm chanting 8 rounds, giving up all my habits. And even 2 years ago, he told me, I told him crazy, never in my life, absolutely not. But somehow, I don't know how he did it. But now I'm, of course his wife is praying for him every day, the undercover agent. And they said, I'm trying to get up to 16, and one day I aspire to be initiated. So, you know, Krishna consciousness works magic. You see it every day when we're preaching. It changes the way people see things, but some people, they come by knowledge, some people, they come because they're curious. Somebody's a little curious, and what is this all about? Some people come because they're in distress and because they want money. And some people, because they get the mercy. Some devotee gives them the mercy. So, Parasana, he's getting tricked by Maya. It's better to be tricked by Krishna. Krishna is very intelligent. His devotee is giving prasadam, giving good association over a period of time when people get a change of heart. It's actually for their welfare. Tricking for a good cause, like giving your some medicine when your child's sick, you're putting it in some candy because otherwise they won't take the medicine. It's not to harm, it's for good. So, in that way, it's not a charso bit. It's actually like the doctor somehow giving the patient the medicine to save the patient from sure death. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Any question? Yes?